It's one of the most common words in English and one of the most maligned, but it's been doing useful work for centuries, and lately it's acquired a new hip meaning. Our linguist Jeff Nunberg gives us his thoughts on the little word
I always find it disconcerting to hear a tape of myself having a conversation or giving a talk. Do I really say that much? Of course, it's natural to tune out your own tics and twitches when you're speaking, but nothing makes you seem quite as scattered as those ums do. Pause silently in mid-utterance, and you sound deliberate and thoughtful. Drop an into the pause, and you sound hesitant, indecisive, or simply dim. As the author of an early 20th century book on public speaking expressed his condemnation of the word, grunting is no part of thinking. Letter for letter, probably comes in for more disdain than any other item in the English vocabulary. I say item because most people won't even do the courtesy of calling it a word. And some of them actually get indignant when they find out it's in the dictionary. It seems more like a meaningless noise we use to fill out our hesitations, like the hum your hard drive makes while it's trying to retrieve a long file. But clearly is an English word. Speakers of other languages signal their hesitation very differently. In Mandarin, you say nege. In Japanese, you say eto or ano. And in American Sign Language, you circle your forearm with your palm up and your fingers spread. In fact, English speakers have to learn to use and just like they have to learn to use ball or run or grapefruit. The only difference is that when you say and you're not referring to anything in the world, but commenting on your own utterance. That's what makes the words fascinating to psychologists and linguists. You can learn a lot about the way we turn our thoughts into language by looking at where the process breaks down. For a very readable account of all this research, you can turn to a recent book by the science writer Michael Erard, with the easy-to-remember title of The book actually covers the whole range of speech slips and blunders from spoonerisms to bushisms, but it's particularly interesting on what you could think of as the umological paradox. On the one hand, and seem to play a useful communicative role. According to the psychologist Herb Clark and Gene Fox Tree, speakers use the words to signal upcoming delays in speech, for a minor delay and for a major one. Depending on the context, those signals might mean that the speaker wants to hold the floor, needs time to search for a word, or has to stop and go back to repair a mispronunciation or mistake. Yet despite its usefulness, people have been putting the knock on for centuries. It was the 16th century versions of and that gave rise to the expression hem and haw to mean dither. And modern critics have been even more censorious of the word, to the point where it's become what Erard calls the emblem of a disorganized mind. Maybe the problem with is that it draws attention to our disfluencies and hesitations. That's especially noticeable when it's used in a context that ordinarily calls for a certain amount of deliberation. Fillers and false starts tend to pass right by us in casual conversation, but they can become maddeningly distracting when we hear somebody using them in a radio interview or political debate. And it may be that modern broadcast media have made us more alert to the overuse of than ever before. But as much as we condemn as an unconscious mark of hesitation, we find it useful to have around when we want to consciously fake that effect. People have always used to introduce a euphemism or circumlocution, as if a sudden twinge of delicacy had forced them to break off their utterance. The media didn't take long to uncover the name of the governor's, date. And in recent years, we've started to see a new use of the word as a mock apology before you correct somebody who says something particularly stupid or does something particularly inappropriate. As in, actually, Ringo was the band's drummer. Or, we don't use that word around here. You run into that pseudo-deferential all over the place these days, not just in speech, but in email, blogs, and news features. It has become a hallmark of a wired style of writing that simulates the spontaneity of real-time communication, hesitations and all. And it also signals a certain shift in attitude. You could think of it as a replacement for the snippy hello that first caught on in the 1980s. That, too, was used to emphasize somebody's utter cluelessness. Hello, Ringo was the band's drummer. But the tone is completely different. Hello oozes condescending ridicule. Is anybody home? Whereas involves a more subtle maneuver. You pretend to be hesitating out of a reluctance to embarrass the person you're correcting. But the hesitation itself makes it pointedly clear that the person has good reason to be chagrined. I don't expect that a lot of people will miss that sarcastic hello when it's finally put out to pasture. And I suppose you could see the apologetic as the harbinger of a new age of ostensible civility. But that isn't exactly the sign of a kinder, gentler English language. All that the new really shows is just how snarky civility can be.
Jeff Nunberg is a linguist who teaches at the School of Information at the University of California at Berkeley.